We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the November 27th, 2023 meeting of the University City City Council to order. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Clay.
Present.
Councilmember Klein.
Here.
Councilmember Hales.
Here.
Councilmember Fuller.
Here.
Councilmember Smotherson. Mayor Crowe.
Here. For you, you have the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda? Motion made by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fuller. Are there any additions, motions to amend the agenda? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. There are no proclamations this evening. There's a typographical error in the agenda. The minutes we are approving tonight are from November the 13th. So you have the November the 13th study session minutes. Is there a motion to approve? Motion made by Ms. Klein. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Hales. Is there discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. You have before you the November 13th, 2023 regular meeting minutes. Is there a motion to approve? Motion made by Mr. Fuller. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Klein. Is there discussion? Mr. Clay.
I will be abstaining from the study session and the meeting minutes.
Okay, thank you. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. I'd like to nominate Meg Zelanovich for reappointment to the Arts and Letters Commission.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Hales. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Smotherson.
I'd like to also nominate Asia Hedges for reappointment to the Arts and Letters Commission.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fuller. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Smotherson.
Marcy Deer is nominated for reappointment to the Arts and Letters Commission.
Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Klein. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Smotherson.
And lastly, Mr. John Tiemann. Is nominated for reappointment to the Arts and Letters Commission.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fuller. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. We have no swearing in this evening. We'll now begin our first round of citizen participation. For those of you who are in the audience, if you'd like to speak, there are sign-up sheets over by the door. Then you fill them out and put them in the basket in front of the city clerk. Each person who comes to speak needs to give their name and address, and then the time limit is 5 minutes. We do these in the order that they are given to us. The first request to speak during this part of the agenda is Itzhak Simon. If you could push the button at the bottom for the microphone. Thank you.
Let me begin by reading you something that was in the recent.
Can you please give us your name and address, please?
My name is Yitzhak Simon, or you can just call me Yitzi, and my address is 8025 Amherst Avenue. Let me begin by reading you from the recent Roars issue. This is titled Ethics in Public Service Jobs by Larry Hampton, Chief of Police for University City. Public service is complicated. Thriving communities depend on the commitment and dedication of public servants to manage everyday tasks effectively and ethically. For law enforcement particularly, ethics play a pivotal role as individual careers are built upon the foundation of trust from both the people and the community. When ethics are compromised, citizens may lose trust and law enforcement agencies can falter due to their unethical behaviors of even one untrustworthy employee. On the other hand, following incidents of improper or illegal ethics, effective administrations work hard to rebuild and restore trust within their departments and communities. In the aftermath of the civil unrest in Ferguson in 2014, municipalities in St. Louis County, Missouri, all had to collectively review and revise any practices that were out of balance with the proper reform. Public safety was not the only reform to attract attention from the state. Police departments were also held accountable for unethical court fees, city code violation fees, over-policing, over-penalizing, and more. In addition, the Department of Justice, American Civil Liberties Union, and other similar organizations began examining overly restrictive administrations and organizations that had unethical policies and practices. Dedicated law enforcement administrators continuously train and prepare to overcome ethical dilemmas. Being successful requires comprehensive strategic plans, good policies, and employees with integrity. In my role as public safety director, I approach ethical dilemmas from diverse perspectives. The best solution often results in viewing problems and challenges as opportunities. This involves not just instructing inexperienced employees on the how, but also appreciating the why. Ensuring citizens are educated about proper due process is essential in clarifying the extent of law enforcement when addressing individuals who violate the law. Upholding the principle that no one, including law enforcement officials, is above the law is crucial. Citizens place their trust in law enforcement, expecting them to be stewards of integrity and good faith. Public servants acknowledge the constant scrutiny they face, being watched, observed, critiqued, evaluated, and at times ridiculed. As we face various dilemmas, overreactions are closely observed by those in our community, including staff and elected officials, as well as friends and family. Cultivating an ethical environment for our community to flourish necessitates a commitment to honesty, integrity, transparency, and the ability to relate effectively with all citizens. Possessing moral fiber is not a skill acquired through learning. It is deeply ingrained in our core values. Police officers must embody this quality to ensure accountability, not just for their own actions and decisions, but also for the well-being of everyone around them. Setting a strong example through one's behavior is the best way to embody the values of our police department. When personal ethics are closely aligned with our department's missions and core values, the likelihood of our success and longevity increases. Let me ask you, do you think possessing moral fiber is enough to stand up before a judge in court? Some of you may not know me, but back in the fall of 2021, City Manager Gregory Rose read the council a statement from, let me quote him, my police chief, regarding a complaint filed by a resident, which was me. Here it is. Dear Mr. Simon, I am writing to you because on 5/11/21, you filed a complaint against a member of the police department. I received your complaint regarding the incident, which occurred at Delcrest in Del Mar. Your complaint was designated control number BPS-219. After an investigation was conducted, your complaint was found to be sustained. The term sustained is defined and used to classify an allegation complaint that is found to be true. The employee received the appropriate discipline consistent with department policy. And then he goes on and he doesn't really, I'll read the rest. People living and visiting in University City are valuable eyes and ears for our community and its police department. We respect the input, both good and bad. Whenever you see police action you believe we should be aware of, please report them. The police department takes your compliments and complaints seriously. We believe the public is entitled to efficient, fair, and impartial service. We investigate all allegations of employee misconduct and respond to inquiries about employee actions or department policy. If I can be of further assistance, please contact me. And he puts his phone number. Sincerely, Captain Lemons. After reading this recent article, I couldn't help but wonder how publicly acknowledging ethical issues in UCity Police Department could benefit the city. The failures to address any action taken or plan shows me he is okay having the department open to lawsuits. Instead of covering up allegations against officers, especially ones that have drawn multiple complaints, including a lawsuit from the ACLU, this council should move to hold Gregory, Larry, and the entire UCity Police Department accountable before the city once again finds itself in court because of the conduct of its police department. I have one suggestion. Make police complaints available to the public, as well as information on the nature of, again, let me quote Mr. Rose, appropriate corrective action taken as a result of the complaint. And if you are really feeling in the spirit of accountability, dare I suggest a civilian police oversight board. Thank you.
Our next request to speak is Alexandra Forgerson.
Hello, my name is Alexandra Forgerson, and I'm a current resident of 1457 Forest Green Court. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. I was motivated to be here after watching the recording of last city council meeting, in which I heard the comments made by Mr. Boyd and Councilman Smotherson, who characterized our presence as an ongoing issue within the community. Their comments motivated me to share my perspective, as I believe there is a stark disparity between what you have been told and what is reality. Mr. Boyd states his view is frequently obstructed by an eyesore of a camper. However, in reality, a camper has only been parked 6 out of the 331 days this year. I want to emphasize that neither Mr. Boyd, Mrs. Jones, nor Councilman Smotherson has ever raised any concerns with us regarding the camper. In fact, Mrs. Boyd had a conversation with my husband about the camper, expressing how wonderful it was for our young family. She even shared memories of a camper in her youth. This would have been the perfect opportunity for the Boyd family to express their concerns. Now I want to shift to a broader perspective. For the past 4 years, my family has been diligently adhering to the rules and regulations provided by code enforcement. You can see that on figure one. As I mentioned earlier, a camper has been on site for less than 3.3% of the time allotted by this ordinance. Out of courtesy to our neighbors, we've always made a conscious effort to minimize any impact that the camper may have, and it's only on site for 24 hours at a time. On Tuesday, November 21st, my parents met with Police Chief Hampton to discuss the short-term parking of travel trailers. My parents reported that it was a very productive meeting. However, the chief also shared an ordinance with us that they believe the city council has been operating upon. You can see that in figure two. I want to respectfully bring up my concerns I have related to this ordinance. First, the language of this ordinance implies restrictions on any vehicle that should be parked in my driveway. This would logically extend to regular cars as well. Additionally, if this ordinance is true and should be interpreted that no camper should be parked in U-City, I would argue that the severity of this regulation appears to be disproportionate to those of other municipalities. Notably, even Clayton allows a 24-hour window for loading and unloading. My second reservation is related to public accessibility. Despite my persistent efforts, I've been unable to find this exact ordinance or receive guidance on where to find it. Even Police Chief Hampton couldn't find it on the website. If you look at figure three, that's on your last page, you will see that neither the ordinance nor the corresponding keywords to the ordinance are on the website. I kindly request the council's assistance in clarifying and providing the specific details of this ordinance. Furthermore, I'd like to draw attention to another relevant matter close to home, my daughter's play equipment. What's worth noting is not a single neighbor has voiced a complaint about the play equipment with us, besides an unexpected visit from code enforcement. If you drive around U-City, regardless of the ward, you will see swings, hammocks, children's tables, basketball hoops, fire pits, and more in the front yards of homes. These features all suggest a community where families prioritize inviting and recreational spaces for their members, especially their children. Imposing excessively strict laws on children's toys risks alienating young families from seeking this nurturing environment. I believe this could be counterproductive, especially considering U-City's efforts to revitalize the third ward. Overly stringent regulations, such as those on play equipment and yards, might impede the city's progress and decrease student enrollment in our public schools. All the aforementioned concerns are tied to ordinances, yet they collectively highlight a more profound issue concerning the city's approach to conflict resolution. Councilman Smotherson had every opportunity to facilitate a conflict resolution with both parties. Instead, he further exacerbated a situation by only communicating with and advocating for certain members of his ward. After receiving my letter, Councilman Smotherson did contact us. He explained his lack of prior contact, citing no written procedure requiring him to do so. His acknowledgement of us being a persistent issue for years underscores the need for a conflict resolution between both parties. I do want to acknowledge that Councilman Smotherson's recent effort to engage in conversation with us about play equipment. I do value these as essential steps in the right direction. I appreciate the opportunity to address the council today. I urge you to consider my perspective and the need for clarification on these ordinances. I hope the council will carefully evaluate the broader implications of their ordinances in question and recognize the importance of maintaining a welcoming environment for families. I would also urge the council to consider internal practices that promote pro-social conflict resolution within our community. I think effective communication and understanding can go a very long way in addressing concerns and promoting a cohesive living environment for all of its residents. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. That concludes this portion of citizen participation. We'll now move forward to, are there any council comments at this time? If there are not, we have no public hearing this evening. You have before you the consent agenda, which is K1 through 5. Is there a motion to approve? Motion made by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Smotherson. We do have a citizen who'd like to speak on an agenda item on the consent agenda, so we will have him come speak at this time. Mr. Fox?
Hello, my name is Patrick Fox. I live at 1309 Purdue. Some of you may know that I'm a member of the Parks Commission, and in looking at the consent agenda item number 5, I was concerned to see that there was a desire to add surveillance cameras to the parks without it actually being communicated to anyone on the Parks Commission for their consideration. We consider such mundane things as temporary art installations, sign placement, and light bulbs. The fact that we weren't even entertained to discuss this is a little bit insulting to me. And I would urge you to hold this on the agenda so that it could go through the proper channels through the Parks Commission. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, Mr. Fox. That concludes the comments on this. Are there any other questions or concerns regarding items K, 1 through 5? Mr. Clay.
Yes, I had a question about item 2.
Okay.
The purchase replacement for the drones. What is the cadence that we are looking to develop for replacement of drones? We saw some information that these drones we have are roughly 5 years old. It seems like now is the time, but will there be kind of a defined cadence for replacement as we have with other capital items?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clay, yes, there will be a routine kind of replacement period for all of our equipment, drones included, because especially when you're dealing with emergency equipment, we have to have a confidence that that equipment is going to work on the scene, and we can't learn that it's not working while we're involved in an emergency. So I'm not sure what that period is. I think it's 2 to 3. Chief, do you want to come up and respond to that, Chief Henson? But as you know, in addition to the period that we need to replace the equipment in, this also presents additional technological
Correct.
Advances that certainly that simply don't exist in the current drones that we have. But I will turn that over to Chief Henson to let him respond.
Correct. Thank you. The transponders that are part of the topic of discussion is just one aspect of it all. One of the things we look at when we replace these is the cohesiveness for the use of the drones. Right now, the drones we have, the technology was top of the line 5 years ago. Now you can buy the same technology off the shelf at Toys R Us. We have advanced to the point where just like mutual aid for the fire trucks and such, we do that with the drone systems and they come here also. This gives us the capability to mesh the drones, intermingle them for the command staff to be able to see. But like before, whoever's flying the drone would have to stand next to the command staff to see what's going on. The new technology gives them the ability to just transmit that to that command center where they can see what's going on. It also gives them the technology to have different drones from different departments communicate with each other and work together to cover an area, like as in such of a search when someone's missing or something like that, or a tornado strike where there's a long alleyway. Along with that, the new drones have the capability of tagging structures, tagging people in trouble and such. So as before, now we fly over, we find somebody that's got the, who we're looking for or has the issue. We have to stay on that site and try to lead people in, to whereas now there's a tagging system. You can actually pinpoint that person, tag them. It'll send out the coordinates directly to the dispatch to have the trucks go to the exact locations. It works the same whether it's a tornado or a flood to where you could just fly along and tag all these different issues that are going on and type in the notes. It automatically goes to the dispatch, who's able to dispatch the right equipment, because not only do they have the exact location, but they have a picture of what's going on at that location and know what to send along with your notes as you fly that drone. This is all new technology. It's something we don't have. Before, we were the leader in how the technology worked as far as the drones go. Now we're not even kind of included in the mutual aid part of it, because our drones don't talk to any other drones at this point. So it's not necessarily a set time to replace them. It is the technology and how it fits in with how things go together and mesh.
Yeah, okay. It would seem like for budgeting purposes, we might need something that establishes some sort of rhythm, because these are not everything you're saying is correct. I understand that the drones we have currently aren't even supported anymore. And right. And I think all of us that have phones understand that, right, that reality. But for budgeting purposes, these are not, you know, inexpensive items.
Correct. And so, these were budgeted. We had put these in the budget last year, prior to all this new technology coming around, simply because of what we were spending on repairs and the batteries failing and having to send them in for software updates that could no longer be done over the air. So there is kind of a time period where, you know, this is coming. We knew it last year when we put this budget together for this coming year. So we're not asking for money that hasn't already been budgeted, sure, and asked for to replace them for this year. And it's simply because it's just like anything else. There's wear and tear. There's, you know, systems give out. We kind of follow that trend in line to see when that kind of stuff happens, and have them replaced before it's detrimental to our operation.
It feels like 3 to 4 years seems probably about right, because certainly by what you described, I mean, you could almost make the argument that every year you could upgrade.
Correct.
Which I don't know if that's fiscally
right
feasible for right us, but it sounds like you know, if money were no object, that's something that you might actually pursue. But it sounds like, based on the budgeting you articulated, every 3 to 4 years, which I think probably is the more fiscally prudent way to think about this. So
correct. I mean, we keep an eye on the technology and the mechanics of everything and kind of try to project when we think that replacements are needed.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. I just wanted to address, and this is a different issue, in reference to Mr. Fox, and I just asked the city manager, I just find it kind of his statement in that this wasn't number 5 on the consent agenda. If you could explain, Mr. Rose, why this was not presented to the Parks Commission, and I just want to make sure I understand why. That's all.
Yeah. Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem Smotherson, this is a public safety item, which typically the responsibility for ensuring that we minimize criminal activity, not just, you know, throughout the city, but certainly, I guess, included in that would be our park system. I would not recommend taking this item off the agenda, because I would hate for the city to be in a position where we delayed and this type of camera could have saved a life. But I'm sure that Chief Hampton and Captain Lemons would be happy to speak with the Park Commission and share with them why these cameras were selected and how they integrate with our existing system.
Anything else? Hearing none. Before you have items K1 through 5.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Clay.
Mayor Crowe. So the chief can make a presentation to the Parks Commission.
That is correct. This is just the first phase of it, I believe. We are looking not just in our parks, but it will be throughout the city where we are having additional surveillance occurring. I've had Captain Lemons here. Is there anything that I'm missing, Captain Lemons?
As we go through this, to my colleagues, please remember that the consent agenda, if you want to have a Q&A, needs to be, the item needs to be pulled off the consent agenda and put on the city manager's report rather than a continuing Q&A about a consent agenda item. Mr. Lemons.
City Manager Rose, Mayor Crow, Council. No, sir, there doesn't seem to be anything that we missed in regards to the cameras. Just like City Manager Rose has stated, this is a public safety issue. Chief Hampton, myself, or a designee from the police department would be happy to present any items to Parks, to the Parks Commission, that is not strategic in nature.
Thank you. Hearing nothing else, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We have no city manager's report. We do not have unfinished business nor new business. Are there any council reports this evening? We have no further citizen comments that I know of. Are there any council comments as we conclude the meeting? Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I just wanted to address the issue presented tonight by the Forgersons. I think that's the appropriate word. And just making sure that everybody understands that for me, my role as a city councilman is that I represent the people in the third ward. And so I don't control the police. I don't control the inspectors. That's left up to the city manager. All I simply do is if I get a phone call or an email and it's a complaint or it's an issue, I pass that on to the city manager, who addresses those things the way that he sees fit. That's basically it. Now, you know, and the thing that I wanted to say is that the reason that there's a very touchy subject about contacting people in an issue, because I don't know what the issue is. I don't know what the conflict is. I don't know what's deep, what's involved in that. And trust me, I've done this for 7 years, going on 8 years. And there are times where the other people don't, it's not my job or not my place. The only time that becomes, I step in, is when I'm contacted, and you guys did, you called me. The minute that you open that door, I'm willing to listen to and talk to you about any and everything that you have a concern about and issues. Other than that, all that I am doing is passing on this information. I will say this. I did say this is an ongoing issue. Not that you are an ongoing issue, but there should be, all I'm looking for is the city. And I think Ms. Ferguson is absolutely right. The codes are not clear. And we need to clarify those codes. We need to get that straightened out so that all of us are on the same page. That's the problem. We're not on the same page, because as a council member, I believe it says one thing, or I believe that I've been told it says this. I also have the same problem. I couldn't find it in the codes at all. I mean, I had to call and make several calls to actually get the correct information. I still don't really have the correct information. There's nothing in there that says anything about 24 to 48 hours. So again, clarity is what we need. We all need to be on the same page. And I am absolutely open to speaking with you all and talking to you about these issues, all of them. Because again, that's what I do. That's my job. That's why I'm in this seat. But, and I'll just simply leave it at that. I do apologize that it's gone to this level. This has happened to me before. So again, being in this seat, there are issues that are touchy and not clear as to how it should be addressed. So hopefully we'll get better at that. And I'm hoping as a city, we can resolve this issue and these issues. So thank you.
Anyone else? We all have on our desk, courtesy of probably the city clerk, the next ribbon cutting out at the markets at Olive at 8636 for the new Chase Bank opening. So it was nice to see that the development continues to expand. Hearing nothing else before this body, is there a motion to adjourn? Motion made by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fuller. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much for coming this evening.